Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you can personalize the ticker that crawls across the bottom of your screen? Simply tap on Menu in the upper right, then choose Settings and Personalize My Ticker. If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
David Harrow with us from Harris. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
We're getting some real optimism. People, select people, not all, talking about solid double-digit returns for 2012. Do you enter the year optimistic?
Yes, I'm very optimistic, and it's based on two factors, really. The first factor is that despite all this gloom and doom that we've witnessed in the second half of last year, the world still seems to be chugging away at 3.5-4% global economic growth, which is conducive to corporate profitability. And then when you add to that the second factor, extremely low equity market valuations, especially in light of low interest rates. So this makes a combustive type of atmosphere for stocks.
Last year, marked by a lot of volatility, net outflows from domestic equity mutual funds, according to the Investment Company Institute, chalked up to just investor nervousness, and yet the S&P was unchanged at the end of the year. Give us the big picture for 2012.
Yeah, I think the big picture, that actually tells a lot. There is a lot of bearishness. There's so much money on the sidelines, and of course you see it looking at these safe sovereign yields, the safe sovereigns, the U.S., Japan, Germany, etc. If you look at what money is yielding over 5 and 10 years, you basically get nothing. Mm. And this is, again, represented by the fact that there's been a flight of retail, wholesale, whatever money into these asset classes. I mean, for the first time in over a 30-year period, bonds beat stocks. And so I think that's telling you something. And
so bonds beat Harrow as well.
Bonds, well, I was
they
in
beat you to death
years ago.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's, over 10 years, they haven't.
That's kind of a negative reason to buy stocks. You know, it's because you can't get a return anywhere else. Is there a positive case, too?
Well, you can get a return on stocks if you look at earnings yields, dividend yields,
yeah, yeah,
et cetera. And the fact that these yield streams, these cash flow streams, should be growing unless one believes in a kind of catastrophic macroeconomic event for the global economy, corporate profitability has been pretty good. I mean, I think most of us would be surprised today that if we look back at the last 3 or 4 months, look at the United States economy, all those negative headlines, all that market volatility, and then look at sales of BMWs and Mercedes. You know, people, I think, are becoming dulled by what's happening on our screens, and they're behaving cautiously, but they're behaving as normal.
But when you're picking, Tom likes the term yield hog. Should you not be a yield hog? I mean, not just pick the stocks to pay the 5-6% yield?
Yeah, exactly. You can't look at that, because what you have to look at, besides that yield, you have to look at the payout ratio that yield is coming from and the earnings power of that entity that is producing that cash flow stream. You know, if it's a company that's yielding 5 or 6%, but it has a 90% payout ratio and it's at peak earnings, chances are those yields aren't going to stay there. If it's a company, take a Daimler. I mean, I heard the Mercedes ad, so I heard that. It's yielding probably about 6-ish percent, less than a 50% payout ratio, net cash on its balance sheet. And over time, you would expect its cash flow streams to rise.
Being in Chicago then, to go from Mercedes-Benz, and we thank them for their support each and every day here, can you bring that over to Detroit, to Ford Motor? Are you seeing a 2- and 5-year vision of U.S. auto developing those cash flows?
You know, I think certainly in the case of Ford. Now, of course, my expertise is international. I happen to be a car guy, so I'm going to comment on Ford. I think it's certainly in the case of Ford, where you have a good balance sheet, you have good product, cost down, as long as these U.S. producers continue to wean themselves from incentive crack, you know, there's a chance that a business like Ford is going to be all right over the medium term.
I look at one of your portfolios. The price to sales is an act of God. It is 0.60, which is just absolutely remarkable amount of sales coming in versus the valuations. And then I see that, you know, I don't know where you are right now, but as of September 30th, you've loaded the boat on the banks and financial services some 20+%. What a big bet in the banks. What are you waiting for with the banks? Is it loan demand to return? Is it a play on the euro within an international portfolio? What are you trying to observe in 2012 that will jumpstart the banks to a better price?
Yeah. Within that financial portfolio, the portfolio of financial stocks, are a lot of companies and some banks that have heavy exposure to asset management. And that's an area which we are very bullish on over the medium and long term. And those companies, if you take a Credit Suisse or a Schroders or even a Daiwa Securities, the real strengths, the real reason why we invested in those businesses, it's a very strong asset management
is the persistency of the cash flow that they generate.
Exactly. And what happens is, take a company like Credit Suisse, gets net new money 4 to 5% a year, and then eventually there's a return on that base of 4, 5, 6, 7% a year. So you have decent, you know, mid-single-digit revenue growth. In the meantime, because it's a European financial.
Now, this, I don't mean to interrupt, but just because of time, this is critical. Then does the new Basel requirements, the new effort towards a utility bank, does that benefit a value guy like you because they're going to generate a more conservative, measured, more persistent cash flow?
Well, that's the positive benefit of Basel III, is that you get that. The negative is, of course, that's going to put a little pressure on their return structure because they have to hold a little bit more capital. That return on equity, all else being equal, is going to be a little lower because the denominator equity has to be a little higher.
Are you like Meredith Whitney, optimistic they'll cut costs and rationalize to get to that new capital requirement, that new conservatism?
I think they'll get to some of it, but they won't they won't get to all of it.
You know, I just noticed Dan Draper, he looks a lot like Dan Draper in Mad Men.
Don Draper.
Don Draper, excuse me.
Yeah.
I was thinking of what's-her-name, Jones.
He's got a martini and a cigarette. No, I'm just kidding.
You're not supposed to tell people that. My shareholders may be listening.
So you mentioned Credit Suisse. Are they the leader in that part of the business?
Well, they have a huge private banking operation, and that's probably well over half their operating profitability comes from that private bank, and that private bank continues to grow. But what people have been bothered by with Credit Suisse is their investment bank and the capital requirements that are attached to that investment bank. And they've taken a lot of risk off the table. They've been kind of early. Brady Dugan, who's the CEO, his philosophy was, I'm going to get this stuff off even before they tell me, before everyone else rushes to the door. So he's been kind of early at doing that, but they're very, very well capitalized. They're all set for Basel III.
This is an important conversation, folks, for all of you from Wall Street listening, and that David's parsing out the benefits and disadvantages of this new utility banking so many people are talking about. Thank you for your many messages and our conversation with Meredith Whitney yesterday, Ken.
Yeah, we've been having this discussion for, 3 years now, whether it's safe to, like the old movie trailer, is it safe to get back in the water when it comes to banking stocks? How about U.S. banks, big versus small?
Yeah, again, U.S. banking isn't exactly my expertise, but I would just look for the ones that have a good deposit franchise, so a good source of loanable funds. Okay spreads, low cost ratios. Eventually, if it's a healthy, well-positioned small bank, they tend to get gobbled up. So if you could find that, you're going to get a well-run bank with a probability that someone's going to want that franchise.
You have Toyota.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Mercedes earlier. Give us a perspective on Toyota. What a challenging 2011.
Yeah, it's been a very challenging 2011, but this is the time to be looking at businesses like this. You don't want to buy them at the top of the cycle when everything good has happened. When all the good news is in the stock, perhaps that's Hyundai. You know, Hyundai's had exchange rates at their back. Toyota and Honda doing poorly at their back. They've had all these positive factors. Look for a good quality business with a good balance sheet, a good franchise, good cost structure that has had some short-term, what I believe are short-term impediments to progress. And Toyota between...
That defines Toyota.
Yeah, between the earthquake. Well, in fact, it started in 2010. With the problems with the alleged sudden acceleration, some of the quality issues.
Right.
And then they were just recovering from that. And in 2011 comes the earthquake and the Thai floods. But what we see happening now is, again, this is a business that has a large amount of net cash on the balance sheet. They are the world leader in green engine technology. They have a great spread of businesses throughout the world, good exposure in the emerging world. And they are starting to launch some really good new product, which should help bring people back to the showroom.
They've gone, Ken, from 8,000 to 2,600 on a yen basis.
Right.
They're priced back at a 1996 nominal level.
Yeah, and it's interesting, 52-week high for Toyota, 93.90 on March 1st of last year, right before the tsunami and earthquake. And
you're looking at the ADR. I'm looking at 720-3JT, which is one of the first codes you memorize when you get a Bloomberg.
Yeah, well, that's because in the ADR, most of our audience knows how much money that really is.
That's
now,
true.
Yeah. Now, they are being hurt, of course, by the strong yen. That does not help because they still export from Japan. So the strong yen hurts. They are taking production down in Japan. They used to make 3.6, 3.7 million units. They're going to take those down to 3. They're going to expand in places like the U.S.
Yeah, well, they've got, I think, Honda and Toyota, 80, 90% of their U.S. and Canadian sales are manufactured in the U.S. Right?
More so for Honda.
More so for Honda.
And a lot of those components still come from Japan.
Right.
But they're starting to back away from that, and they have to because of the strength of the yen.
You know, Carlos Ghosn recently, who runs Nissan and Renault, openly questioned whether it makes any sense to manufacture in Japan anymore.
Yeah, that was a very there was a very good story just recently. And at this exchange rate, it makes it very difficult for Japanese manufacturers to compete. And this is why you're finally starting to see Japanese manufacturers outsource.
David, if you and I open any given U.S. big company annual report, they're going to have cash flow front and center. Which nation, which culture, which market also shares a desire to return cash flow to the Japanese raise dividends and do share buybacks? Is there a certain nation that gets this?
Well, there's good news, bad news as it pertains to Japan. The bad news is they really are not where they should be in terms of optimal cash flow allocation. However, the good news is they've been changing for the positive. A typical Japanese company 5 or 6 years ago maybe had a 5 to 10% dividend payout, hoarded cash, et cetera, et cetera. We're starting to see movement, and that gives us one reason to be optimistic about Japanese stocks. We're starting to see them finally look at capital allocation as a way to create value, but it is slow. Mm. So the delta is positive. We're just not at a level we should be.
You just said a Greek letter. You're done. David Harrow, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.